fine. Okay. Okay, we got a new recording, and I'm just going to set it right here so it gets, the mic is right there. And at the same time, look at the notes. Okay, so thanks so much for doing this, and that was a great walk. This is so great to be out here. And in the introduction to this thing, I'll say that we did this out here, and yeah, we did a walk for a
happy place.
Yeah, good place. So a year ago, we talked to you about the recently passed, what is now Act 59, Vermont's biodiversity law. And a year plus later, how are you feeling about its implementation?
Overall, I would say I'm feeling upbeat about its implementation. We have just recently received the first year of report deliverable, which was the inventory of conserved lands, and gearing up for the second phase, which will be the planning phase, which will engage more Vermonters in talking about the lands they care about and how they would like to see them used in the future. We have had a little bit of a bump in the road with working through how to include agricultural lands in the 30 by 30 and 50 by 50 biodiversity goals that we set into statute with this act. And I think a portion of our next session will be taken up with understanding that issue a little bit better and further, and trying to address it head on. You know, we sort of thought we had made it clear in the statute, but it's turning out not to be as clear. So we need to incorporate probably a fourth category of conserved land to include agricultural lands. And set a separate goal for agricultural lands.
And set a separate goal.
Not have it be considered biodiversity. And as you know, we have separate goals in New England for food resiliency. And I think it's super important for us to make sure that as we're headed toward these bigger visions, we don't, we count accurately at lands that are supporting biodiversity and lands that are supporting food resiliency. And those are separate, those are distinct land use types. And we just, I think it's important, especially as we're getting started, to make sure we're being accurate.
So where does the confusion come from?
I think it gets, there's two things that I've heard. One is that lands, even the lands that are primarily we've invested in Vermont Conserve are farms, but those farms of course include, many of them include more sort of natural land cover than cultivated land cover. And so then you get to a question of sort of the data that we have and how well it is able to track different land use types within a parcel. So that's one aspect of the confusion. And then I think the other aspect of it is driven a little bit by a concern around limited resources and funding and priorities for conservation. And it was always my intention when we started to talk about this as a goal to have it be separate and have this process be a step towards the state of Vermont understanding that if we want to conserve biodiversity for future generations, we're going to have to step up our investments in conservation. And now I think we're also becoming aware of the fact that we may need to expand how we conserve lands as well. When we're really talking about conserving a significant portion of the Vermont landscape, I'm not sure that the current land conservation models we have contemplated that. And so now we need to reconsider it.
What other modes of conservation are you thinking of?
Well, increasingly, I'm pretty bullish on public ownership again. You know, we've t- to some extent, pump the brakes on that. I mean, I know that there've been some community conservation projects that have resulted in increased town forests, but as you know, there's a lot of town forests in Vermont across a wide array of types of land and amounts of land, town by town, but it's probably fair to say every town in Vermont has a town forest, or just about every town does, which is an incredible blessing. But we could build on that. I'm also thinking, you know, the legislature this session is going to be thinking about, you know, increasing our capacity at the county level for shared services. And I think maybe a piece of that is exploring what's the best scale to be doing land conservation at when considering public land ownership. What's the best agency to hold it? And also in Vermont, we are blessed to have the Green Mountain National Forest, which we are sitting in right now, to be a player. So we can be looking to them to be doing a little more work in the parts of the state where that makes sense. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we're going to, with the public awareness increasing on the biodiversity challenges and obviously the climate crisis, there'll be hopefully more support for more funding and also different types of land ownership, including more public lands.
Going back to the agricultural land versus land that supports biological diversity, many would say that there are certain agricultural lands that do support certain kinds of biodiversity. Is parsing that out part of what you're thinking about? And is that like a big data challenge? Or what are the challenges with thinking about that?
I think the challenges for me in thinking about that is that we just have to be really careful. On the one end, there are agricultural practices that actually, you know, denude biodiversity, that are deleterious to it.
Right.
And we certainly don't want to include those in a biodiversity conservation goal or plan. On the other end of it, there is a whole body of both research, but also practitioners, farmers, who are striving to have agricultural practices that are both productive for food and support some level of biodiversity. I don't think you're ever going to find the biodiversity of an old forest on a managed rangeland, but you could certainly see practices that are neutral towards other life or are supportive of certain species, which I think is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, the grassland birds comes to mind for everyone. But there probably will be others, you know. I know there are others, and I know that we have really, there's exciting. I actually went maybe last year to a seminar at the agroecology program at UVM to learn more about it, and just very cool stuff happening there.
Yeah, some really good work happening there. But I can see that having a fourth category and just taking a hard look at agricultural lands as a body of lands and asking all those questions and looking hard at them makes so much sense. It's simple in a sense. It creates a simplicity and then also creates a pathway to answer some of those questions and see, you know, just parse out what kinds of biodiversity might be supported by agricultural lands.
Yeah. And I think, again, we've tried to kind of mirror the USGS major categories, and I think that's their fourth category.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would like to keep it, like I said, a separate goal for conserved lands that are feeding humans versus conserved lands that are providing habitat for all other life.
Right. Well, how about what happened in this past session with reforms to Vermont's Act 250?
This is a big step in the right direction. I'm super excited about it. I have been working on this pretty much for the last 10 years. I've been in the legislature for 10 years, and I would say I didn't 100% know that that's what I came for, but it turns out that's what I came for. I got kind of lit up within the first couple of years, thinking about the need for Act 250 reform. I was a district commissioner immediately prior to being in the legislature, and I've always been a land use person. That's a tick. And throughout my career, I've been interested in land use planning and regulation and obviously environmental protection. So we made huge strides towards moving Vermont toward what I call, what we call location-based jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to what has sort of, I think, to many of us become arbitrary triggers that were meant to be used as sort of proxies for the scale of the impact of development. So the size of the parcel historically triggers Act 250. The number of units can trigger it, but we're trying to move towards location-based, which means if a community has identified an area for growth and it makes environmental sense, then perhaps we don't need to have Act 250 oversight to build more dense housing or more dense commercial developments in the walkable core area of our towns. And then also at the other end of the spectrum, identifying those areas that are essentially irreplaceable and probably shouldn't be developed, or really need site review at the state level to be sure that any development that happens on those types of parcels is sensitive to larger benefits that those parcels give society.
So there's some overlap there in between the biodiversity law and the Act 250 reforms, is that those synergy is maybe a better word.
Right. So, and I even named it like Community Resilience and Biodiversity Protection Act 2. Literally. I mean, it was it was Community Resilience, and it is Act 250 bill is Community Resilience and Biodiversity Protection through Land Use.
Yeah.
As opposed to the first bill, which was just the first part of that. So exactly. And even this next biennium, when we move on to solar or renewable energy siting, we're going to start with Vermont Conservation Design as the bedrock of providing guidance to renewable energy developers for where to begin conversations about siting renewable energy. So really, we're just...
So part one, part two,
part three. Yeah, so...
And Vermont Conservation Design underpins all of it, right,
sense? That's the intention here, is to really get to people to understand that our future depends on an intact and functioning landscape, both for wildlife, but also for human communities. You know, for biodiversity reasons, for flood control reasons, for food resiliency, and frankly, for viable human communities. You know, I think increasingly we're aware of the fact that a certain density of human settlement is necessary for vibrant schools and vibrant communities. So I think I have a sort of a vision that each county will have a pretty viable hub. I live in Middlebury, and we're the county seat. And I think if every county had a core of a community like that, and then secondary communities like we have with Vergennes and Bristol, which are, you know, pretty significant sized communities for Vermont still, but not as big as Middlebury. And then we have some very vibrant smaller communities throughout the rest of the county. It makes a lot of sense for land use, but also for vibrant human communities.
In the process of passing this most recent legislation, what were some stumbling blocks, if you want to talk about them?
The Act 250 legislation?
The Act 250 legislation.
What we call Tier 3, the identification of those environmentally sensitive areas that would need increased scrutiny, was the place we got the most pushback, in particular from the administration on. I thought we would have been closer to being able to articulate what those resources are. And we did come down to, I hope, a fairly strong suggested list of what they would be. But there was a lot of resistance to trying to define that through the legislation. So at the end of the day, we we didn't do that, and we are setting up a professional board that will be tasked with the rulemaking, overseeing rulemaking that will further articulate what those areas are. And we've, to support it, we're doing a lot more local and regional mapping and planning and getting communities thinking about what those places are in their own towns. I think a challenge certainly was around the current pressure we're feeling around a housing shortage and the perception that Act 250 is a burden to developing housing I'm not convinced of that, but that's certainly what folks think. And so deciding what areas to exempt from housing development in the short term while we're standing up the process that we are around more robust planning for identifying growth areas and conservation areas. So we did extend the area and the time frame for exemptions for housing as part of this bill. Those are the two biggies, I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm thinking back, how long has Act 250 been on the books?
I think it's 53 years now. It was, I started this, let's see, we did the commission on Act 250 the year it turned 50. So that was 2017, 18. So we probably did that study, that commission was 2018. That was 50, I think. Or maybe that was, maybe 2020. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's 50, it's almost mid-50s now.
I'm wondering what, you know, when it was originally passed, what the reaction was, whether there was pushback, whether there was fear, and over time, my sense is that over time, people have come to hold this up as one of the most important pieces of legislation that ever happened in Vermont. It makes Vermont what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if these new, even with some of the pushback and questions with these new changes, with these changes to the law, might we see into the future, and might we see that the things that people object to now, they might be thankful for in the future.
You know, I think one of the things that was most heartening about this very kind of long, slow motion conversation is that at the end of the day, we were able to have, in particular, the business community really stand by us on this and stand with us. I think increasingly, yeah, I think people realize that there are a lot of reasons to value the Vermont landscape and environment. And, but at the end of the day, we're kind of almost all here because we love it and we know the risk that we're at. And so, I think there'll be some tough conversations about, you know, maps and planning, and those are hard for people, but I think you're right that we'll look back on this and be proud, and, hopefully we can fulfill the vision of Vermont Conservation Design of conserving at least 80% of our species, and maybe some that we don't know yet because they're migrating here due to climate change.
Right. Well, you talked a little bit about the upcoming session. If you could sort of summarize what you see coming as the big efforts.
Well, so the big effort is actually going to be more oversight, because we've done so many big efforts lately. Again, in the 10 years I've been here, the first biennium I was here, we did Vermont's Clean Water Act, Act 64. So we're going to kind of, it's time to check in on a lot of big bills that have been passed. So we'll spend a fair amount of time. How's that going? What's going on there? Mm. There's some... there's the Global Warming Solutions Act. There are Act 59. There's going to be Act 250. So there's a lot of things to check in on. There's the Clean Heat Standard. We'll be doing that. I think that as part of those check-ins, there'll be some statutory changes that are necessary. I don't know if you're familiar, but there was a petition to the EPA to have water quality enforcement move entirely to the Agency of Natural Resources. So we'll be learning about that and then responding and providing any statutory support that's needed to change, make those changes. So we're actually hoping to tamp the brakes a little on big changes. But I would say the, you know, renewable energy siting, we need to address that. We have created new ambitious goals for renewable energy in Vermont, and we want to be sure to be clear to developers about what we want that to look like as it rolls out. I'm sure I'm missing other things, but there are, those are things that come to mind.
So I wanted to ask you also, well, one question just about how you personally function in the in this work in the legislature, and how you, with all of the stresses, the pushback, the conversations, I was going to say conflict,
both,
but,
yeah,
but both, and how do you sort of keep your head above water, keep your sanity, recharge your batteries, stay sane through it?
Well, this summer I've had a chance to go to four different wildernesses in the Northeast. So that's the primary way that I would say I renew myself. I went to the Wild River Wilderness in New Hampshire, and then I went to the I did the Nine Carries route over in the Adirondacks. What's the wilderness called? It's in the, you know, we'll have to look that one up.
Yeah,
canoe area. And then I did a sea kayaking in Nova Scotia for a few days with friends up in the 100 Wild Islands. And then most recently I went out to Killarney in Ontario. So that's how I do it. I need time in the wilderness. But you're here on my daily dog walk, which is the real way that I renew on a daily basis. My pal over here and I come out every day. She gets me out every day, and that's just grounding and important to me.
And we're sitting here in an oak forest on a bony ridge with some really interesting several kinds of interesting oaks and chestnut oaks and some plants that are kind of uncommon, huckleberries all around us. I can see how this is restorative for you, and also see how public land really does play into the whole picture in Vermont, and important for everyone. One, I guess, final question I wanted to ask you is, what are your core values, and how do they play out in your work?
Well, we are in really challenging times that can sometimes be somewhat overwhelming, and I guess part of how I find renewal and keep the faith is that, I mean, I really believe that the answer to so many of our challenges today is reconnecting humans with nature. And I would say that's like my primary core value, because for me, as I noted, that is certainly how I ground myself and keep myself sane. And I think when I look at our social challenges, our environmental challenges, our the biodiversity and climate, clean water, all of it, if we could rebalance the system and take care of the earth the way that she's taking care of us, we could solve a lot of our problems and continue to have you know, economic progress and human I think we could progress as a human species, but also be better stewards of the natural world, and it could be a win-win for everybody. And it's really the only way forward. But sort of the way that I find my peace is I know that sort of nature's got this, and right now we're at a moment of deciding how much we're going to be involved in the future, basically. So, you know, and actually I have obviously a deep commitment to service, and I try to encourage others. We need more people to be involved in every way they can be. Not everyone needs to be involved in the same way, but people need to unplug and engage in their communities and kind of roll up their sleeves and work on the issues that light their fire and they're most passionate about. So whether it's housing the homeless or creating amphibian crossings that are safe, there's a lot for all of us to do right now.
Is there anything else you want to say?
Well, that's enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Amy.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn this off.